You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning. It is time to get up with the power of the dogs. Revenge for Kirby's kids comes in a fabulous fourth. We're on every possible angle. Then NFL playoffs. Are the 49ers about to 86 the boys in round one? It's a bad matchup. Speaking of which, wait till you hear what one member of our crew says about the team Tom Brady drew. We are loaded up on a Tuesday, and we're getting up with you starting right now. From the Seaport, I'm Greeny. Delighted you've chosen to get up with us on this Championship Tuesday, and we've put together a championship roster as you would expect. Take a look at who's getting up with us this morning. Graziano's breaking stories. McElroy's got the insight. Jeff Saturday wants to run the football. Swagoo's got plenty to say, and Dominique will be with us as well as we begin the only place we can, Indianapolis last night, and the Natty. Georgia, Bama, SEC rivals going head-to-head. The Dogs looking for revenge after a rough night a month ago. Pick it up second quarter. Bama with the ball in a low-scoring first half. There's your Heisman winner, Bryce Young. That's Jameson Williams, projected to be a top 10 NFL draft pick, but down he goes, and he would not get up. It's a knee. It looked bad. We'll hear more today. Bama up 9-6 at the half. Late third now. Same score. James Cook. The running game finally getting going for Georgia, taking it to the Bama 13. And if you're wondering just how into it the coach was, take a look at Kirby on the sideline. He's giving Cook a run for his money, taking it down by the goal line. First and goal now, a couple plays later. That's Zamir White. He had 84 yards and that touchdown. Georgia up 13-9 going to the fourth. Early in the fourth, Bama still down four. It's Young. He had 369 yards passing. 28 of them here. Ajayi Hall with the catch. Crimson Tide looking to take the lead right back. But few plays later, third and goal. They got a good chance here. Holden is open, but they can't get it to him. Young, visibly frustrated. Crimson Tide settle for a field goal. They're down 13-12. Next, Georgia possession. This could have been the biggest game of the year. Stetson Bennett, under pressure, throws it away. Looks harmless as it bounces out of bounds. But take another look. They rule this a fumble. And Brian Branch on the other end of this, watch as he makes this recovery, doesn't even seem to be aware of the significance of it. But he's got it, and the toe is down. It's a fumble. It's a turnover. Bama capitalized. Cameron Latu, five catches, 102 yards. That touchdown tied up 18-13 off the turnover. They went for the two. Don't get it. So how would Bennett respond? That's the question. Here's the answer. Adonai Mitchell, 40 yards and a touchdown. Take a look at the adjustment Mitchell makes on this football. I'll show it to you again. Spectacular play and a spectacular response from Bennett. Georgia punches right back. They went for the two and didn't get it, so they're up 19-18. Bulldogs then get a stop. Georgia back on the field, third and one. Brock Bowers taking it to the house. Bennett finishes with 224 yards passing, two touchdowns. Bama can't believe it. They're down 26-18, but there's still time. Bama running out of time. Third and four. Young. Brian Robinson. 12 yards. Still alive. Later in the drive. It's a one-score game and one more chance for Nick. Here we go. How about a deep shot with just over a minute to go on third and 10? Say goodnight. That's Keely Ringo making the play they'll be talking about in Georgia for the rest of their lives. The 79-yard pick six, and that's the way it goes. Ringo with the play. Georgia finally overcoming their arch rival in the biggest game of the year. And the emotions on the sidelines. Both sides, Saban down. Bennett, emotional. Kirby Smart wins it at his alma mater. The first to do that since Philip Former a generation ago. And the two former colleagues exchanging pleasantries at midfield. Georgia wins it 33-18. Their first national title since 1980. And afterwards, emotions.
It just hit me. I didn't even watch Keely score. I thought he went down right when he caught it. Because as soon as he caught it, I just teared up. I just wasn't planning on it. I mean, good Lord. Wow.
You're national champion, Stetson. How does that sound?
That sounds awesome.
There were people that said we weren't conditioned enough, and it pissed a lot of people off on our sideline. And they went to work. And before we came today, we burned the boats. and we came a fighting. And I'm proud of these men.
I just feel really poorly that we didn't finish the game better than we did in the fourth quarter, because we played a heck of a game against a heck of a team. For the first three quarters of the game.
I'm just proud of my guys. Love my guys, everyone on both sides of the ball. I just wish I could have been better for them tonight.
What a night in every way. Georgia's defense much better this time around against Alabama. They were the best in the country all year. Bama blew them out of the water a month ago. This time the Bulldogs, two picks, four sacks, holding the Tide to just one touchdown in four red zone trips. And so let's dive right into it. Greg McElroy and the Big Swagoo ready to go. Greg, we'll start with you. Georgia wins the national championship and gets revenge. How'd they do it last night? What was the single biggest key?
Well, Greeny is weathering the storm. And this is a team, by the way, that's had Alabama on the ropes on several occasions in the last 4 years, dating all the way back to the 2017 National Championship game, where Tua Tagovailoa came off the bench at halftime and led to some late-game heroics. However, Georgia, in each of the last four games against Alabama, had a significant lead. Three out of the four times, they had a double-digit lead, and Bama stormed back. When it looked like it could go awry last night, after the Stetson Bennett fumble, Bama gets the ball inside the 20. They go right down, score a touchdown on the pass to Cam Latu. It felt like it was about to slip away, and it felt like collectively in the stadium, all the people donning red and black were saying, oh no, here we go again. And then Stetson Bennett and the offense responded. And it was as if they said, no, we're not going to do this. Not this time, not tonight. And they made an amazing adjustment, threw it on first down, made sure protection was sound, got a free play, threw a shot to A.D. Mitchell, and then secured the lead, and then bounced back after a nice defensive stand by hitting Bowers for the icing on the cake touchdown. It was just a remarkable performance of resilience, especially in light of adversity. And adversity, by the way, is something Georgia has not handled very well against Alabama in the past.
You know, and Stetson Bennett now becomes the stuff of legend forever. And Swagoo, no one loves the drama more than you do. And for those who don't follow this closely, this is a kid who was a walk-on. This was a player who was questioned so much of this season, whether he really was the right quarterback for this team, particularly after that game against Bama a month ago. And then for him to bounce back with that performance last night, Swagoo, what do we say?
Yeah, it's just phenomenal. Listen, the drive late in the game is how you beat Nick Saban football teams. Like, you don't have a normal span throughout a game, or you don't have just a normal kind of run-of-the-mill game and beat Alabama in national championships. You needed those plays that Stetson Bennett made at the end of the game. And I give Georgia a lot of credit for giving him that opportunity. A lot of coaches would shell up and say, okay, let's see how we can slowly matriculate the ball downfield. Let's figure out how we can just stay manageable and hopefully score a touchdown at the end. Monk and the offensive coordinator and Kirby Smart was like, yo, we going for the gusto. It's either going to work or it's not, taking those deep shots. And fortunately for them, Stetson was able to make a couple throws. Protection held up. Listen, man, it's a lot of unsung plays throughout the course of a game. But the block that Cook made to give Stetson Bennett extra time, I know a lot of people are not going to talk about it, but those are the type of championship-making plays you have to have in order to beat a Nick Saban-led football team. Because you're not going to out-coach him. You better have players that's going to make plays and outplay him on the actual football field. And that's what Georgia was able to do. They were able to make a few more plays than the Alabama Crimson Tide last night. And usually that's the only way you get Nick Saban in big games or national championships is individual performances.
That's the other big piece of the story here, Greg, and you know it well, because you know both Mounts so well. This was the student against the teacher, if you will, and the teacher has dominated not only this rivalry, but everyone. None of the former assistants generally ever beat Saban. One of them had during the season, but now they do for the championship. What does this win and this championship mean for Kirby Smart?
Well, it's significant. As you can see, I mean, it was like when Steve Young finally won his elusive Super Bowl there in the 90s. You just felt like someone needed to go over to Kirby Smart and rip the monkey off his back, because he did it. He finally did it. And his team responded so beautifully, like I alluded to just a minute ago. They responded so beautifully in spite of significant adversity. And look, Bama had some too. I mean, Bama had their fair share of challenges. Yeah. But it was as if when I talked to Kirby after the game, it was like he exhaled. It's like, man, thank you, God. Because a lot of people, Greeny and Swagoo, a lot of people said about Georgia, man, if they don't win it this year, when are they going to get it done?
Yeah.
Because this roster was absolutely loaded on both sides of the football. And if they couldn't get over the hump against a team in Alabama that was young, replacing a lot of pieces, beat up with injuries, and extremely inconsistent, if they can't beat them this year, when are they going to be able to do it? So it was a massive win for them, knowing that this was the year they almost had to have it with the roster that they accumulated.
How about Bryce Young, Swagoo, the Heisman winner who played his best game against Georgia and that great defense a month ago? He was good last night, but clearly not as good. He was missing his two best weapons by the time the second half rolled around. How about him last night, and what do we see for him going forward?
Yeah, I like the resilience, man, and I like his approach after the game, taking it upon himself and saying he had to be better for his guys. But, you know, yesterday looking at that game, it brought me back. Like, I was so excited because it was actually a line of scrimmage game. And I know we're going to talk about the passes and the quarterbacks, but Georgia was able to pressure the quarterback this game unlike they were able to do in the first game. Bryce had his way, and he had his way a lot against Georgia because he had a significant amount of time to make plays downfield. And obviously his receivers not being available caused him to have to potentially hold the ball and not have that confidence that you need to have in order to make plays against a defense like this. But when you look up front, and Georgia talked about it all week, we have to get to the quarterback. We have to make Bryce Young uncomfortable. And they were able to do that a lot last night, even with just a regular four-man rush, but also the pressures that Kirby was dialing up, even in the red zone. I was super impressed with just the aggressive nature that they wanted to go and kind of, for the sake of speaking, cut the head off the snake. Because if you would have allowed Bryce Young to get comfortable and start seeing things like he's been seeing them all season long, we might be talking about a different outcome even without these wide receivers. But that pressure up front was able to make him uncomfortable enough to give Georgia a few plays on their end.
So Bama wins the SEC championship, but Georgia gets revenge and wins the national championship. Much more on this game as we continue. Greg, we'll bring you back shortly here. Swagoo, stay close, because let me turn my attention now to the NFL. As we head forward, let's quickly look back as we finish up week 18. And Dominique Foxworth jumps in with awesome, awkward, and awful. Let's start with it, Neek. Give me something awesome from week 18.
I mean, that single throw right there from Trevor Lawrence was outstanding. And it's like it resembles all many of the other passes he had in that game. The Jaguars went from having a really, really depressing offseason to having one with some optimism because they finally saw Trevor Lawrence be the quarterback that they hoped that he could be. And that pass, I think, encapsulates it.
Swagoo, give me something awkward from week 18.
Yeah, looking at Brandon Staley go for this 4th-and-1 on his own 18. It reminded me of the movie Life when Ray told Claude, they finally got us, man. We ain't gonna never get out of here. And that's what happened to the damn Chargers. Brandon Staley finally called that 4th-down play that really, really put his team back against the wall. Punt the damn ball, man. It was so awkward, and I was so peed off about what he did in that particular moment.
That's well said. Jeff, give me something awful from week 18.
Man, the Colts versus the Jaguars, man. I can't believe Fox just brought that trash up too, dude. So freaking dirty. What are we, 14-point favorites? Go down to Jacksonville to punch our ticket into the playoffs and absolutely lay an egg. Fox, you did it on purpose too, dude. That's a shady squad by you. Hey, no business putting that thing up. That dude tips it to himself. Absolute trash. That's the most awful thing. Not only did I see it this week, all season, Greeny. All season, that's the biggest awful we got.
I love when they say absolute trash. It's my favorite. It's my favorite. They say absolute trash.
Did the TV manage to stay on the wall as you watched that game from home, Jeff, Saturday?
Bro, let me tell you something. My wife, she had to step in front of the TV, Greeny. I almost snatched that thing up. All I was going to send is a picture on Twitter with some smashed-up TVs. And my wife said, that's not the example we're setting in the house, Jeff. You're going to be better than this. Keep the TV where it should be. I'm telling you, I had to walk outside. I don't even have high blood pressure, and I was looking for blood pressure pills. I was that pissed off watching that game, man. Oh, I couldn't take it. It ain't good for my heart.
That man needed a prescription.
I'm kind of glad they're out of it because it ain't good for my heart.
It's now officially a Tuesday on Get Up. We have so much more of this to come. As we continue, Tom Brady going for his 8th ring. Will he make it out of wild card weekend? Are we putting the Bucks on upset alert this early? Speaking of which, will there be a gold rush in Dallas? Could Dak and the boys be one and done? We're talking NFL playoffs as we get up with you on ESPN. I'm on fire. I got to get it, keep my mind on my business. I'm going to show
you how I'm living. I'm on fire. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Back on Get Up. Good morning, Georgia. Here's your wake-up call. Georgia Bulldogs, IMG Sports Network, Scott Howard.
Snap to Young. Drops back. Pressure from the edges. He throws near sideline. And it's intercepted. Intercepted. Keely Ringo at the 21. Off he goes. 40, 50, 45, 40, 35, 30. Near sideline. Breaks the tackle. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. 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 Georgia. 32, 18. Let the celebration begin.
The play they'll be talking about forever. We'll talk about it more as we go. Meanwhile, to the NFL playoffs, and we turn our attention to the NFC, where the Niners and Cowboys will meet in the playoffs for the first time since the 94 NFC Championship. Last 4 winners of this matchup went on to win the Super Bowl. Cardinals and Rams, Monday night on ESPN. They split the season series. Cardinals won in Week 4 in L.A. Rams returned the favorite Week 14 in Arizona. And then there's Tom Brady. The Buccaneers begin their quest to repeat against the Eagles. Philly was 0-6 against playoff teams this year, including a loss to Tampa in Week 6. But these aren't the Buccaneers we saw so much of the year, as they have been hurt by a lot of injuries. And Dan Graziano, let's start there. What can you tell us about Tampa and some of their walking wounded?
Getting some good news, I think, Greeny, this week. Leonard Fournette sounds like he'll be ready to be activated from injured reserve and return in time for this game. They also feel pretty good about the chances of Shaq Barrett and Jason Pierre-Paul, their pass rushers, 2 edge rushers, to be ready for this game. Levante David, the linebacker, maybe. I think they need to see him do some stuff in practice this week to be sure, but they're getting healthier on that side of the ball. Bruce Arians did express some concern about Jamel Dean, the cornerback. They've had some depth issues, health issues in the secondary all year, but healthier than they've been over the last few weeks for sure.
And so, Jeff, Saturday, as we just sort of start to look ahead to this thing, and the Bucs are a prohibitive favorite, is there anything in this matchup you think does not work in Tampa's favor?
Yeah, I think the Eagles' run game versus the Bucs' run defense is actually an advantage to the Eagles. Listen, when you think about, everybody talks about the Bucs' run defense and how good they are. They've actually given up 8 100-yard rushing games this season. That's twice as much as last year. Those injuries have mounted up. I understand guys are getting back, but if the Eagles have any chance to win this game, they will stay committed to that run game and what they, and that's their identity. Just like the Tennessee Titans, they understand this is not going to be an air-out game. And think back to last season. Taylor Heinicke put his name on the map by the way that he played against them, and it took the Bucs to the fourth quarter to beat them with a 13-point fourth quarter to win that game. It's a huge, huge issue. The Eagles have to run the football. The Bucs got to stop it to win.
Well, Jalen Hurts can do that. What do you think, Nick? Are the Bucs in any kind of trouble here in their first game?
I don't think so. I mean, of course, Jeff is going to talk about running the ball. Then he brings up last year's game in which Heinicke played well. Like, it was Heinicke who played well in that game. That's the reason why in the game. Not because they were going,
He ran it, Nick. He ran it.
Whatever. The point is, all what they need is their front four to play well. Last year, their run in the playoff was predicated on the fact that they had 76 pressures in that run. They were able to get pressure on quarterbacks, particularly in the Super Bowl. That's what's going to take them far. I don't think they have too much trouble with this running attack of the Eagles or outscoring the Eagles in that game. But in future games, they're going to need JPP and Shaq Barrett to play well, and hopefully a healthy Lavonte David to help out with that running game.
Well, maybe that's the point here, Swagoo. And so let's sort of look big picture, because Tom Brady and the Bucs aren't in this thing to win a round. We know what Super Bowl teams, a year ago today, we wouldn't have picked the Buccaneers to win the Super Bowl. Nope. Where are they right this minute? Do they look like the team to beat in the NFC to you?
No, the Green Bay Packers look like the team to beat. But if you think that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with Tom Brady going to go in the playoffs and not give everybody all they can handle, you ain't been watching football the last 20 years. I get it with the injuries mounting up and all of the things that have transpired over the season. But who's more prepared for a damn playoff run than Tom Brady? Like, who understands what it takes to win more than Tom Brady in this league? I got to give him credit for that. He still has Gronk. Mike Evans will be back. I think the huge thing that Grimes just spoke on was getting Leonard Fournette back as well. And listen, fellas, and Jeff, you know I'm with you. The run game is vitally important. It's going to give you opportunities to make plays downfield. But you ain't winning the Super Bowl just running the damn football. Not now. Not now. Your quarterback going to have to make some plays downfield. So when you look at this Tampa Bay team and you think about all of the guys that they lost, and we lamented about that with Godwin and obviously AB walking off the field, this is still a team with stars all over the place, and they got a quarterback that understands how to do this as well as anybody that's ever done it in the NFL. So I ain't just knocking them out because they didn't suffer all this attrition with injuries-wise. And Lord have mercy, if they get JBP and Shaq Barrett back and get teams in third and long situations, we know what that's going to look like.
All right, let me leave it there for the moment. We have much more on this game as we go, but I want to mention something else about Brady. You're aware, obviously, the series continues here, Man in the Arena, which is presented in part by NerdWallet. Excuse me. Episode 9 is streaming now, and in this installment, Tom Brady talks about how much he appreciated his relationship with Bill Belichick. Listen.
I had a great relationship with Coach Belichick. I think he wanted a quarterback to show up every day and put the team first. And I wanted a coach that showed up every day and put the team first. And we found an amazing working relationship together, and I think he was the best coach I could ever ask for. We had our challenges at different moments, but they were just moments. They don't define what the relationship was. And in the end, we accomplished things that no one had ever accomplished in NFL history.
Wow. Don't miss the latest episode of Man in the Arena, Tom Brady, streaming now exclusively on ESPN+. All right, as we roll on, we roll back to Indy. Did Georgia end Bama's dominance over college football last night? We'll ask Reese Davis that question. He'll join us live in a moment. Plus, back to the NFL. Are the Niners about to 86 the boys in round one? It's a bad matchup for Big D. We're talking about it as we get up with you on ESPN. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We are back on Get Up, and in case you're just getting up and missed it last night, we'll take you through the action of the national championship game in Indianapolis. The defending champs, Alabama, taking on the arch rivals, Georgia. Picking up fourth quarter, 8:14 to go. Georgia down 18-13. And Stetson Bennett comes up huge. After a big turnover that could have cost Georgia, he throws that gorgeous 40-yard touchdown to Adonai Mitchell, who makes the great adjustment on the football and comes up with the play and the lead. Georgia up 19-18. They went for the two and didn't get it. Later in the fourth, Bulldogs had gotten a stop, and now they're back on the field. And here's a big third down play, and boy, does it ever turn big. That's Brock Bowers, and they're not going to get him. Takes it in. Georgia with some breathing room, up 26-18. But Bama still had one last chance just over a minute to go. This is a third and long. Bryce Young looking for a lot, and instead it's going the other way. That's Kelee Ringo with the play they'll be talking about forever in the state of Georgia. 79 yards on the pick six. And finally, the power of the Dogs, if you will, overcoming their arch rival in the biggest game of the year, and the emotions on the sidelines extraordinary. The devastation on one side, and on the other, the emotion of Stetson Bennett, the young kid, the walk-on who finds a way to win the national championship and become a hero forever. What a night it was for Bennett, the first former walk-on to beat a Nick Saban coach team as the starting quarterback since Brian Griese was at Michigan in 97 and Saban was at Michigan State. By the way, Michigan also won a share of the national title that year. And let's get the perspective from the host of College Game Day, Reese Davis, who's good enough to get up early after a late night. Reese, thank you. And so let's put this in perspective. You've been with it basically from the start of this season all the way through. How do we put in perspective what Georgia did this year, capping it off last night?
Greeny, they had the yet you lack one thing. Georgia's been a powerhouse the last several years, but the one thing they lacked was winning a championship, and the other thing was overcoming Alabama. And short of maybe pulling the backup quarterback into the game to make it completely poetic, as Alabama had done to them a couple of times, nothing could have been more perfect. And probably with having Stetson Bennett and that story as memorable a one, as fascinating a one as I can remember in recent college football history, it sort of checks the final box for Georgia as an elite power in this game. They've been a power, but you have to win a championship, and now they have.
And the same can be said, I suppose, of their coach. Kirby Smart becomes the first coach to win a championship at his alma mater since Philip Fulmer at Tennessee a generation ago. What does this mean for him?
Well, I think it means that he doesn't have to answer the questions about whether Alabama is living rent-free in his head. I mean, Georgia had lost in agonizing fashion all four times that they played Alabama previously, and he doesn't have to answer those questions anymore. Now you have what this really has been, I guess, for the last few years, a battle of superpowers, of two of the college football juggernauts who are going to compete for championships for the foreseeable future, given the way that they have structured the organization, the way they recruit, the way they use the transfer portal, all of those things that they have that will keep both of these programs at the top.
And so let's then go to Alabama, because this is a sport where we always start looking ahead to the following year immediately, and they will have the best player with Heisman winner Bryce Young coming back. I know that Vegas has made them the favorites next year. Will they be the best team in the country as next season begins?
Well, you mentioned Bryce Young. He's the best quarterback, Greeny. I think the best football player in the country next year and was this year is their defensive lineman, Will Anderson. I know you and I both love the NFL draft. If Will Anderson's not the first pick in the draft, the NFL team that doesn't do that is not doing it right. So I think that Alabama being the favorite is reasonable. You're talking about a team that got back to the national championship this year and lost 8 of the top 38 picks in last year's NFL draft, and a similar number from the year before. So I think in many ways they're going to be just as strong, if not stronger. They had some injury problems, which are well documented, at wide receiver and running back and defensive back. So I think both these two teams will be right at the top in terms of preseason favorites.
That's Reese Davis. A busy night last night. Thanks for getting up, my friend. I appreciate it very much.
You bet, Greeny.
All right, that's Reese last night. Much more on that game as we go. Now we turn our attention to another game this weekend as the 49ers and Cowboys, speaking of rivals, get set to renew that rivalry. They'll meet in the playoffs for the first time since the 94 NFC Championship game, which at that time concluded a run of three straight years that they met in that game. All the faces obviously have changed. Dak Prescott and company making their first playoff appearance since 2018. Dak, a 1-2 playoff record, but he's had a total QBR above 70 in all three games, so he's been very good. What's the forecast in this one? FPI likes Dallas, giving the Cowboys a 64% chance to win. They've been the more dominant team all year, and they have home field advantage, and yet it feels like everyone is putting them on upset alert. All I've heard about since the weekend ended was how this is a bad matchup for the Cowboys. So, Swagoo, let me start with you as my beloved former Cowboy. Is this a bad matchup? How worried are we right now in the Swagoo household?
Oh, hell, ain't nobody worried. I mean, listen, man, we know that we know one thing about the San Francisco 49ers is that they run the ball at a very high clip, and if you can't stop it, more than likely you won't have an opportunity to beat this football team. And what I mean by stop it is make sure that you put the game in Jimmy Garoppolo's hand. And yeah, I know he made some phenomenal throws and had a good game against the Los Angeles Rams, but you want to live in that vein as opposed to letting Kyle Shanahan dial it up. I've heard all of this talk about physicality and the things that the San Francisco 49ers do. Is that new? Like, the 49ers, every time they play, every team should be on upset alert by the brand of football that they play consistently as a football team. But I hear through all of this conversation, are the Cowboys, like should they just wait for the game to be over and kneel every time the 49ers get the football? I think Dak Prescott and this offense will have something to say about how this game goes. I think this defense will have something as well to say about how this game goes. You look at Deebo Samuel, you look at Kittle, those are the main focuses. But Deebo in particular, how do you take care of him and run after catch? Well, we got a guy. We got a guy that can play at a very high level by the name of Micah Parsons, who is a guy that can kind of eliminate what you want to do from a star player, especially when Deebo is lining up in the backfield and doing things like that. But this is the 49ers, y'all. Like, this ain't no team that you shake a stick at. I picked them to go to the playoffs when they had a losing record because I started to see the things coming to fruition based on what they do from an offensive standpoint. But upset alert, it's the damn playoffs. The 49ers better be on upset alert as well.
That wouldn't be an upset, but I hear what you're saying. Cowboys are a pretty slim favorite in this game. Dominique, how are we feeling in the family group chat? How is the Prescott family group chat looking ahead to this game?
We're feeling fantastic. I mean, I gotta be honest. Like, I'm called Dak's cousin, and it makes me seem like I'm a homer. But I'll let you know when I became Dak Prescott's cousin. I was one in his rookie year who said they should bring back Tony Romo for that playoff game. Then I watched that playoff game, and I saw Dak Prescott put up 17 fourth quarter points. And then I watched the following season how Dak Prescott played, and I was a believer from that point on. Then I was in the front of the bandwagon and watching everybody else jump on late. And this playoff thing is going to be another situation like that. Dak has been one of the best playoff performing quarterbacks with a 75 QBR in three games, and he's led game-winning drives in the playoffs. So I'm going to be happy to be at the front of this train. I'm pleased to be the conductor of the Dak Prescott is an awesome playoff quarterback train. I'll make some room for you guys to hop on later on. We got plenty of seats, baby. Get on this train. It's going to take us all the way to the championship game at least. So,
settle down.
Greeny, I'm going to save you a ticket. I'll save Dan a ticket. Jeff, you know, anywhere I'm at, you always welcome. But just wait and see. I can't wait till Monday morning to talk to y'all.
Well, so Dan Graziano, let's take a look at this. Let's take a step back. The Cowboys come into this thing with a gaudy record, obviously a division champ, and they have the home field advantage. But a closer look at that record, what does it reveal?
That they were a bully team in their own division. They are 6-0 with an average margin of victory of 22 points against NFC East teams this year.
Yep.
They are 6-5 with an average margin of victory of 3.5 points against everyone else. The only playoff teams they beat are the Eagles and the Patriots, and they needed overtime. So I think Dallas should win this game. I agree with Dominique Foxworth that if they can make this game about who has the better quarterback, then it shouldn't be close. But that's an if. And right now they have not looked like a dominant team when they've played outside of the Eagles, the Giants, and the Washington football team. So we have to see that before we really feel that great about it.
I got a question. Jeff? I got a question.
Go ahead, Marcus.
Who has? What team has?
What do you mean?
Outside of Green Bay, what team has?
What team has
has
a
dominated.
Better difference between their division performance and their outside of division? I mean,
has
like they play
dominated.
In the worst division.
You said dominated.
And they dominated their division.
Okay.
But they lost to Arizona. They when they've played playoff teams, they have not been dominant. Are they good?
Dan.
Sure. Can they win? Of course. They should win the game.
Dan.
But they're not a dominant team when they travel outside of the NFC East.
Go, Jeff.
Okay. Dan. Let me just say this, Dan.
Jeff.
Right now, it's like talking to a wall talking to Swag.
Here we go.
And I'm the same way. I'm a homer for the Colts, too, right? I'm that guy. Where Swag is. I know where Cousin Fox is. I know where he's sitting on the train and how he's got the conductor seat and choo-choo and the whole deal.
This is
what I know. I know this much. I know in those last five games, the one team that came down and put it on them wasn't in their division. And that was that Arizona Cardinal team. And here's the thing about the 49ers.
Oh, my God. It was 25-22.
Their run game and Deebo Samuel. How about this? They have 75 explosive plays this season. That's third in the NFL. You know where the Cowboys rank on playoff teams on explosive plays? Dead last. It ain't just going to be about Deebo Samuel. Ooh. That boy Jimmy G, who just lit up y'all's favorite Matthew Stafford, he's coming for them Cowboys,
too.
Whatever we're all getting on,
I got a question.
You know, don't overlook. overlook this San Francisco
49ers. Can I ask you a question?
Team. They've been banged up.
Go ahead.
They're getting healthy. And now all of a sudden we're talking about physicality against the Cowboys.
Can I ask you a question, Jeff Saturday?
Can I
ask you a question? Yeah. Who lead the league in turnovers?
Yeah.
Who lead the league in takeaways?
Oh, my. Bro, you think Shanahan's going to make it a Garoppolo game to turn it over?
It don't matter.
No.
It don't matter?
It won't do it.
Okay.
Jeff,
all right.
We're going to save you a seat on the train, but it's going to be
that man just said takeaways don't matter.
I'm going to let y'all know. Put this face back on TV next Monday and Tuesday with Swagoo. I'm going to let y'all know.
All right, we will set aside extra time in our second hour for this conversation. Bookmark that. In the meantime, right now we're hungry. It's time for the pancakes.
Set them down is a keeper. That is a Tuesday staple.
Get some of this. Get some of that. Throw them out the club. Swagoo, throw them out the club. You see them? One pancake, two pancakes, three pancakes. Ooh.
All right. It's just as good when we're not in person. Go ahead. They still taste good. Jeff Saturday serving them up hot. Give us the cake.
They still taste good.
You don't got me hyped, Greeny. Don't
extra
worry about
butter.
It. It done pissed me off already. Starting at 8:05 this morning. I'm ready to do this. Gainwell, hey, running back from Philly. Talk about a rib flat. Nothing better. Hey, see that? Get some of that, Gregory. You see that? Hey, you better get used to that. Come up this weekend, too. Rib platter. Set them up. Knock them down. That's what it looks like when you get nasty in the fridges. Gainwell, big play right there. Love it. One pancake because he's a little man. I probably should have given him three. Now that I know this conversation for putting on your boy Gregory and putting him down the way he did. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, watch Miners. This is a repeat offender. Mercy. I want you to watch him dump him and then watch the guy want to fight him. Don't miss that one, too. That's what happened. Hey, talk about security all the time. He don't need no security because that man's so punch drunk, he can't even hit him, connect with him. That's how nasty you put him down. You got to love Miners. Finishing him, putting him down. Two pancakes, one for the dump and one for the missed punch. Nothing better than that. And then to finish this thing off, Tennessee Titans, more rah, 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 rah. Run that rock. Watch that bowl. Yay. Y'all want to know why they at home for an extra week? Watch this offensive line. Watch that bowl. Boom. Get some of that, little man. Take some of that. That is what I'm talking about. That's why men get to sit home and take a vacation, because that offensive line playing nasty. Roger Saffold, 3 for taking that linebacker and throwing him on his back. That's what I'm talking about, Swagoo. That's what I'm talking about, Fox.
That's big time, Jeff. That's big time. That's big time. We talk about King Henry so much, we forget about that Titans offensive line. Them boys get after it out there.
Marcus will have his revenge.
Boys are nasty.
You damn right I will.
As we continue, it is the end of one era, or error, in New York. Dave Gettleman gone. Should there be other changes on the way? We'll talk about it next.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
back on Get Up. Busy moment in the NFL. Dan Graziano, let's run the hurry up with the coaching situations.
Yeah, Matt Nagy out in Chicago. They are interviewing GM candidates and head coach candidates. You see our old friend Bill Poley in there. He's going to be involved in this search. First name we heard yesterday was Leslie Frazier, the Bills' defensive coordinator. They're also planning to interview Bills' offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, and the two Bucks coordinators. You see Jim Harbaugh there. I don't think he's going to end up being a candidate in Chicago. I think he's more closely connected with some other teams in this process. The Miami Dolphins let go of head coach Brian Flores. This was a surprise to a lot of people around the league. The issues had surfaced between Flores and the GM, Chris Greer. Their relationship was not in a great place from what I'm told, and it seemed like the owner of the team picked Greer over Flores. Harbaugh going to be connected here because Stephen Ross, the Dolphins owner, has always had a fascination with him, but he did say yesterday, I'm not going to be the owner that takes Jim Harbaugh out of Michigan. Ross, obviously a big Michigan fan and backer. Giants fired general manager Dave Gettleman, or he retired. Excuse me, but they're looking for a new GM after Gettleman is retired. Joe Judge, the head coach, still there, but from what I've been told, GM candidates, there are going to be plenty of them for the Giants. The Giants are going likely outside of the organization, very unusual for them to do that. And if the new GM comes in and he's not aligned with Joe Judge, it's still possible they make a move there. Judge still in place, but I'm not sure he's 100% safe just yet.
And did you tell us that he has been involved in some of the meetings here, that he is a part of the process to some degree?
I think what he has had conversations with ownership about, you know, GM, possible GM candidates. And I don't want people to misunderstand. It's not like the Giants have gone to Joe Judge and said, well, who do you want? The Giants are very concerned that going forward, their coach and GM have to have an outstanding and productive working relationship. So they want to know who Judge has in mind, what kind of person he could work with. And then they want to interview the GM candidates and ask them about Judge and potentially other coach candidates if they decide to move on. So it's not just like he'll get to pick the guy. He hasn't earned that. Obviously, the record is what it is, but they do want to make sure that it's a team, a pairing that can work well together.
Understood. So you want to make sure that Joe Judge is in the room to discuss the person who might get hired and come in and fire him. That makes a lot of sense to me. Here's our general manager, Mike Tannenbaum.
That's where you, man.
Don't put words in my mouth.
Listen, and it has nothing to do with
it. Isn't exactly what you said, but at
talent.
The end of the day, it is what it is.
I mean,
that is what exactly is happening here to at least some degree. Mike Tannenbaum, help me. Help me make sense of what they're doing right now with the Giants.
Yeah, lots to unpack here. Obviously, they moved on from Dave Gettleman, and now they have to make a decision about Joe Judge. My biggest concern is the Giants are getting worse, not better, and I don't think the December New York Giants could have beat the September New York Giants, and that's a big concern, Greeny. So to me, if you're going to bring in candidates, you have to fundamentally say, what did this head coach learn over the last 2 years, and is that a worthwhile investment to keep him? The other thing going through their minds is this, Greeny. What assistant coach will come to work for Joe Judge unless they get a long-term deal? And if you're a player and you're a free agent, why would you come to the Giants knowing that if he's back, he's on the thinnest of thin threads? So if I'm the Giants, I'm taking a long look at a massive reset, both the head coach and the GM, because if you do this, while you hope it works, it really, the odds say it usually doesn't.
I'm fascinated by the way they're going about this. Jeff Saturday, if you're a GM candidate and they're offering it to you, are you keeping Joe Judge as the coach?
No, absolutely not. I don't understand any of this. And listen, I know common sense ain't common, but it's just proven right here. Brian Flores gets canned, and we still got Joe Judge as the head coach meeting about general managers. I got no idea what they're doing up in Giants land. All you needed to watch was this last game when, by the way, they QB sneak it in a reverse bone to on a 3rd and 9 to get space for a punt. Like I don't understand. You have lost every game. Throw that thing up there. I don't care who the quarterback is. I don't care who the receivers are. Like, at some point, put something out there that fans want to see, because that is not what they want to see. And to Mike T's point, has Barkley gotten any better? I know he's been injured. Did he get better? Did Daniel Jones get better? Did Galladay get better? Did Tony get better? Did their offensive line get better? Like, I don't see anywhere that you go, hey, we're ascending as a football team when you lose 6 games by double digits the first time in franchise history. I don't understand any part of this thing. I'm confused. And again, what the Mariners do, it's their business, but it ain't the right business, but if you're asking me.
Nate?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like Joe Judge himself has gotten better. It's a concerning part. Like, it seemed like he came in with a lot of bravado, and it seems like he is still carrying around that bravado despite having a bad record. So if I'm a GM and I walk into a meeting and Joe Judge is sitting there, you know that Homer Simpson meme where he walks into the bar, hangs up his coat, and it turns around and walks right back out? I'm doing that joint. I think it's Homer's dad that does that. I'm going in, and I'm coming right on out because I know this isn't the place for me, and I'm trying to be kind to Joe Judge, but the play that Jeff brings up, and I think it was back-to-back times they did that, backed up. Like, I've seen teams do that on second down or something, or excuse me, on third down so they can get some room. That's when they're on the one-yard line, and they don't do it from a reverse bone. They spread it out so they catch you off guard. Why would you go and telegraph that to them while you already have 4 yards of space and you have nothing to play for? It just seems like you're asking to get fired in that situation. Hopefully Joe Judge figures out how to be a better coach. But if I'm in charge of the Giants, it ain't going to be here. It's going to be somewhere else. And if I'm the GM that they try to sign, I'm
Fox. Hey, Fox, let's just put it like this. Think about the Dan Campbells in Detroit land. They threw a reverse pass. They threw a double reverse pass.
They
left it all out on the field, right? They had nothing to lose. Joe Judge is running the QB sneak on 3rd and 9. I mean, I don't even understand it. Like, it makes absolutely no sense. It didn't show any passion for really trying to win games, just about being scared and careful. No, absolutely not. Nobody wants to walk in and go from another team to that. I'm just telling you, it ain't going to happen.
Timmy Toughnuts in a press conference.
Put a quick ribbon on it for me, Mike T.
You got to read the market. When Brian Flores becomes available, even if you thought that, hey, I'm going to keep Joe Judge, when other opportunities come along, that is a factor in your decision. It's a free agent market, and you got to compare Joe Judge to your options. Brian Flores being available makes it a harder case to keep Joe Judge.
Both of them former Belichick assistants. All right, everybody stay where you are. We got much more to come, including the power of the dogs. Revenge for Kirby's kids comes in a fabulous fourth. We've got every angle covered next. Thank you, Mike. It's